You're listening to the Cash and Burn podcast, and I'm your host, Brandon Metcalf. Join me as I interview and have conversations with founders and leaders about the greatest obstacles and challenges they've faced while building their businesses. Learn how they overcame them and ultimately what made them successful. The podcast is brought to you by Place. Place is a B2B SaaS customer subscription management, billing, forecasting, and metrics platform powered by Salesforce. Growing SaaS businesses use Place to better align their revenue and finance teams so they can boost revenue growth and retention, manage renewals, collect cash faster, and make more informed decisions all directly inside of Salesforce. Hey everyone, welcome back to Cash and Burn. Today I have Matt Treseder. Hopefully Matt, I didn't butcher that. The CEO and co-founder of Leader. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me, Brandon. Good to be here.
I'm glad you're around. We've had fun on the prep show, so I imagine this is going to be a pretty lively conversation. But why don't we start off with like you and who you are, and then I'd love for you to tell the audience about what Leader does.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm Matt. I've got a strange accent. I feel like that's always a good place to start, right?
Where's the accent from?
Do you want to take a guess?
It sounds like I always get, is it Australia, New Zealand?
No, you got it wrong. It's New Zealand. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you always get in trouble if you say Australian, it's New Zealand, or if you say New Zealand and it's Australian.
I know, you get yourself in a big trouble, but it's okay. So yeah, I originally from New Zealand, moved from New Zealand to the States about 10 years ago with my first startup. It was a fintech company and grew extremely fast. Took about 6 months off after that to take a break. Founded Leader, got started early 2020, which we can get into that. That's a whole story. And we've been going for about 3 years or so now, have about 1,000 customers and around 80 staff. Based down here in Dallas, my wife and my dog, Lucy, make this our home. We love it down here.
What kind of dog?
A little golden doodle.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Those are, I'm in Austin. We see a lot of them here in Austin.
Yes, attack dog, you know, just, I was thinking about security and I was thinking about being safe and yeah, Lucy's going to do that for us for sure.
Totally why you get that dog. No doubt. It's like my dogs. I have a Brussels Griffin and a miniature dachshund.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Fierce animals. Yeah. Fierce animals.
What in the world does Leader do?
So my passion's leadership development. The inception or the catalyst of the idea for us was how do we turn managers into coaches using software? And so we started developing this people platform that essentially coaches people, holds them accountable on how to do the basics of core leadership abilities. So think things like how do you do effective one-on-ones and check-ins, gather feedback, goal setting, annual performance reviews. I mean, you name it. We try to build that all into one place to help managers be better coaches. So
yeah, that's super needed. I have always struggled with that throughout my career. So typical clients like B2B companies or?
Yep, B2B. We find our sweet spot is somewhere between 50 to 100 FTEs and about 500. That sort of upper SMB seems to be where we fit best. And you know, ultimately our philosophy is most managers, if not no managers, wake up in the day thinking, how do I be a terrible leader today? I just think, right? I think those malicious people exist. I think they're few and far between. I think most of us wake up trying to do the best thing with the best intentions. And then just through a lack of intentionality or a lack of having a clear system or a process to follow, we just fall into these terrible habits. And then ultimately our team are like, oh, you don't care about me. You never listen to me. I don't feel like I get feedback and yada, yada, yada. So yeah, it's across the spectrum is where our customers we get to serve.
How did you come up with the idea?
It was birthed out of my personal growing pains, I should say. We kind of built it for me. I'm like the case study for what goes wrong when a well-intentioned leader gets thrust into a position of responsibility and kind of stuffs it up along the way. So my background was joined a fintech company, ground zero. I think we had 4 or 5 people. It was called Pushpay, started in New Zealand, as I said. I was the first account executive. Never sold before, never been in startup before, didn't even know what SaaS meant. Kind of get thrust into this 100% commission-based role. They're like, hey, just go figure it out. That was fun. And by the way, we're in New Zealand, and New Zealand has the worst time zone in the world because it was a 19-hour time difference. So we would start at 5 a.m., 4:30 a.m. our time to reach sort of 10 or 11 a.m. Pacific. So did that 5-6 days a week because Saturday in New Zealand is Friday here. So you talk about grit and perseverance and learning how to just bite down and bear through it. That was a fun season. So anyway, what ended up happening, to make a long story short, I became the first sales manager, got demoted and made my way back to sales manager, And then about a year and a half later was the VP of sales. So I went from first AE to VP of sales, 150 people in my team, not really knowing what I was doing and just thinking to myself, there's got to be a better way. And so once we exited that, we went to 100 million and Pushpay went public in New Zealand and Australia. I took 6 months off and I just kept ruminating on, if I could go back and do it again, what's the thing that I wish I had had so that I would have just been a better leader? That was really the inception of the idea.
It sounds familiar with why I've created some of the companies I've created, solving my own problems.
Personal pain. And you're like, oh, I'm not alone. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then figuring out it's difficult to solve that pain, but a lot of fun as well. So, I mean, talking about that. So you left New Zealand and I think you went to Seattle.
Yes. Yeah.
And then from Seattle, you've moved to Dallas.
Yes.
What was that like?
Which one? New Zealand to Seattle? No, Seattle to Dallas.
That's an extreme too, right? Seattle to Dallas is also a bit of an extreme.
Very different. Yeah, very different. Dallas has been a fantastic move for us. So when we first built the business, just cost of living, cost of hiring down here is so much easier. Even putting aside the tax breaks that you can get for being a small company just getting started, yeah. Up in Seattle, it just feels like every barrier and roadblock is in the way to stop you from getting going. The time zone was certainly a big one. Just being able to hit from central time zone, hit everywhere. And then travel probably was the other big factor. I mean, if you're trying to meet with a prospect or a client from Seattle and you're trying to be on site with them, it feels like your whole week just becomes shot. Whereas if you're hitting them from Dallas, you can kind of hit everywhere and just do trips within a day. So it's been a really fun journey, but, we moved, October of 2019. So we really didn't know anything but crisis for the first 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, well, Texas is an interesting, state to be in. We're in Austin. So it was, we saw a lot of friends move to Texas from California, from before that, just because it was a little bit easier to do things and stuff like that. Go ahead.
The polarity of Texas versus back home. I mean, New Zealand was shut. I couldn't even go home for 2.5 years. The borders were completely locked down. So, I like to joke with my family that COVID never came to Texas, and that joke never goes well. So,
I bet not. So you moved to Dallas in October of 2019, and so then you started the company right then, right?
Yeah, we got started. The company was incorporated in sort of late 2018. I came on board mid 2019 as we were just kind of ruminating and coming up with ideas. You know, that stage when you're like, what if we did this? Pivot. Let's do the complete opposite thing. That sort of approach. The first idea we had was let's be Netflix for leadership development. Like the early stages of Masterclass. Let's create leadership content and put that in the hands of people. And we realized pretty quickly that people don't have a content delivery problem. So we moved off that idea. So we really launched, we went through beta and, you know, put the product in front of a bunch of friends and family and some old prospects and customers that we'd worked with in the past. And then after about 9 months, we launched in January, and then we delayed that and launched in March, and then we delayed that and launched in May. And then we actually launched in May of 2020. So that was our first customer.
Wow. So... Yeah. It's kind of similar because I launched, I incorporated Place at the end of 2018. And then we started sales really in the beginning of 2020.
Nice.
And then went through, you know, COVID and all the others. So what was the experience of launching literally right before COVID?
So, well, one of my favorite startup lines is, I think it's Reid Hoffman. If you're not embarrassed by the first version of your product, then you've launched too late. We were definitely embarrassed. So I think we launched at the right time. Right time for the product, maybe they're not the right time for the world. So I remember, I mean, you probably remember those days. Early 2020, we're trying to launch the business, and the amount of pity calls that I was getting from people. Hey, Matt, just checking in. How you doing? What a terrible time to start a business. I'm so sorry for you. Like, what can we be doing for you? I'm like, get out of here with that. Why don't you just buy? Why don't you just sign up? That's how I need your help. And so... It was really intense. I mean, we'd moved, me and five families had moved down from Seattle to Dallas. We got the keys to the office, and then you couldn't go to the office. So we're all working from home. We hadn't launched yet. We had this product that you couldn't even log into. We're still showing Figma designs and pretending like it's real on sales calls, right? And it's one of those moments. It's like, okay, have we just made the world's worst decision? Or are we on the edge of something special? And so every month that you delay a launch, all you're doing is seeding doubt with your team, with your employees, and with your customers that are in beta. And so those 4 or 5 months were trying to avoid the vortex of depression, if you know what I mean. You're trying to catch yourself. I'm like, no, it's going to be okay. And then you have another moment that causes you to doubt. So it was a lot of that. It was a lot of going backwards and forwards and then just coming back to why did we start in the first place and not forgetting that.
Yeah, for us, it was kind of interesting because I've had this conversation a couple times. It was kind of, I mean, there was nothing about COVID that was good, but the timing of it for us was kind of interesting because we were still trying to figure out the strategy of the product. Like when I launched Place, we wanted to solve financial forecasting for other software companies. And because it was the biggest thing that I struggled with at Talent Rover, my first company, we raised $28 million. And, you know, most of that came from like 15 different angel investors. And we always had a rolling round or an open round, which not a fun way to build a company, but it is a way where, you know, every 3 to 6 months we were meeting with key investors saying, you know, we're going to need more cash and here's how much cash we're going to need and all of that. And what it did, it ended up teaching me how to get really good at financial forecasting and cash flow, specifically cash forecasting. And it's how we were able to get the investors to come along on the ride and feel confident in what they were doing. But we were spending like, I don't know, my accounting team would spend 100 hours a month and I would spend about 20 just trying to work on all of these different forecasts in Excel. And I was like, there has to be a better way. So, you know, it was the idea of how do we bring financial forecasting to these companies? But I wanted to do it in a way that I've never seen it done before. I wanted to do it inside of Salesforce because I wanted to connect finance to the business and make it so that numbers are transparent, they're real time, they're easy to understand, everyone's on the same page and all of that. What I didn't really realize, although Salesforce warned me, was finance people sometimes struggle with wanting to have anything to do with Salesforce. And we learned over the corresponding essentially 3 years that, you know, we weren't just a financial forecasting product. We needed to do rev rec and billing. And then ultimately we needed to do customer subscription as well. And when all those things click, it really clicked. But, you know, during COVID, it actually gave us the opportunity to figure stuff out and to continue building. And one of the things that makes our product so great is we have, I think we're probably 325,000 development hours into the product. But our team, we have a full-time team in Jaipur, India, that they're phenomenal. You know, they were just cranking out stuff, which became the foundation of the whole product, which led us to then be able to do billing and revenue and subscription with a finance lens, which has been like one of the keys to our success. So for me, COVID was not fun, but we weren't expecting to set the world on fire with sales in the first year. So it was kind of nice. Okay for us.
I love that idea that it's forcing you to be good.
Yeah. Well, in the current economic climate, I think it's forcing you to be good in a different respect because,
right.
You know, how do you change a mindset of an industry of like the software or SaaS industry of like, just get to your next round, grow as big as you can and get to the next round and go to the next round and go to the next round, where I think a lot of people now are going, wait, that's not how the game can be played right now. Cause what if there's not another round?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember in 2019, we were doing fundraising. And I remember prospective investor asked us, how much runway do you have? And I said about 6 months. And they're like, oh, that's plenty. You'll be fine. Fast forward to 2022, same time of year, we're fundraising. How much runway do you have? 3 to 4 months. Oh my gosh, that's terrible. You're going to have to figure that out immediately. Otherwise, you guys aren't going to make payroll in 3 months. I'm like, what do you mean? 3 months is a lifetime, right? In SaaS world, that's a lifetime. That's 3 years. Not anymore. Just a totally different landscape.
Yeah, I had an investor in 2022 that said we needed 30 months of runway. I'm like, okay, that's a bit extreme. I think that's too much. I would love to have 30 months of runway in one sense, but also in another sense, it's like, what are you going to do with all that money? Yes, you can cover bills, but nearly 3 years of runway? Like, that's insane.
I think it becomes that question of the moment you get the money in the bank, it's like, okay, now go spend it all. And so you're back on that rat race, just constantly kind of chasing your tail. And that whiplash of growth at all costs to, okay, now show us your pathway to profitability, which is an early stage company. That's such a difficult question, especially if you're so much of your cost is sales or marketing driven, right?
Well, and it's also then like, you know, how long are we going to be in this world? Like, I've always believed in trying to run a capital efficient business. And, you know, that's why of all my companies, we've never done like a huge round, although we may do it this next round with Place, we're thinking. But, you know, up until now, it's been like raise a $2 to $3 million round every couple of years and just keep going and all that. Mostly because that was my background at Talent Rover, where we raised as we went. But, you know, I think the flavor of the moment is cash burn and capital efficiency. But what happens when things start to loosen up and all of a sudden we're back in a world where, you know, are we going to just immediately flip and grow at all costs and then you'll get funding? Because the people I'm talking to feel that VCs have been sitting on capital for so long now, 9 months or 10 months or whatever, they've got, and I agree with this, they've got to start investing at some point soon. Now, how aggressive they are going to be with that investment and what valuations they're going to demand for the investment is going to be interesting. But what happens when the spigot goes back on?
Right. That's a great question. And I think it's just the whiplash right back to where we were before. Triple, 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 baby. That's all we want to see.
The triple, triple, double, double is how you become a unicorn or something like that?
Yeah. I did a talk. The years are all getting muddled up now, but it must have been 2021. I did a talk. Triple, triple, double, double is dead was the name of the talk, because now it was triple, 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 double. there was an article I read somewhere, the unicorn's dead, the decacorn is here. Like we only want to see companies can go to that extreme. I'm like, right, let's do it. And then 6 months later, I'm like, that was the worst talk in the history of talks, right? It's like beyond obsolete.
Yeah, the world has changed. The world has definitely changed.
But I think it's really helpful to just hear different people's perspectives on times like this. Like even you sharing, this was good for us. Like you don't want to be that guy that's like saying COVID was a good time. No, that's not what you're saying. It's just, it's a good opportunity. One of my board members, his name's Peter Wooster. He was the first sales rep at Salesforce. And so he's got all sorts of...
I've met Peter.
Have you really?
I think. His name sounds very familiar. I think I might've had a chat with him. He's an advisor for a lot of companies, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. He's the number one reason I didn't get fired as a VP of sales. He was advising us. I was constantly calling him, tell me what to do and what not to do. And I just did it. And they were like, wow, Matt, you're really smart. but I remember, you know, towards the end of last year, it was a dark time for startups. Everyone's been told you got to go do through layoffs and you've got to reduce your growth targets. And it's really tough. And I'm talking to different people and it's kind of this woe is me time for everyone in the investing world and in the SaaS world. I call up Peter. He's like, Matt, are you excited? Like literally some of the first words out of his mouth. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, 2000, the dot-com crash. He's like, that was the best year for me at Salesforce. He goes, that's the best opportunity for me. So he's like, see this as your opportunity to find a way to reimagine and grow the business. And it's one of those moments where you just unlock your perspective. And it's like, okay, instead of being a Debbie Downer and trying to shrink back, why don't we just find a different way to navigate through this? And so then we started talking about, well, the only way out is through. So how are we going to push through?
Yeah, and that through is you know, the most challenging sometimes part of being an entrepreneur and building companies, because you've got to make the hard decisions. And I know we were talking about layoffs, and you've had to do a few different rounds of layoffs. I don't know at your current company or all the companies or whatever, but what's that like?
The worst.
Yeah,
the worst. I mean, so we did four rounds of layoffs at my last company. We just 2 weeks ago completed our second rounds of layoffs here at Leader. Just in the pursuit of trying to become more efficient and making sure that we're investing our money in the best ways possible. But, you know, letting go of someone for performance reasons is one thing. That's not easy. I think the moment that it's easy is the moment you probably shouldn't be in leadership anymore, right? That should always be hard. But layoffs is a whole different ballgame, because it's at no fault of their own. And especially when you're a smaller company, right? We only had, I think at our peak, we had around 120 employees. That every person is felt at that stage. No. Every name is known. Everyone's someone's friend, someone's colleague, someone's peer, someone's family member. And so every person's felt. And so it's a culture test for sure. And I think we were just chatting about it. As leaders, our team just needs to hear that we have a plan and that we're not doing this as a, this is not just one more step towards a sinking ship. This is us actually finding a way to navigate through. But it's the worst. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned you've been through a few rounds.
Yeah, we did one. And it was brutal. I mean, because everything you're saying is correct. It's not about the individual person's performance. It's about the state and the well-being of the company.
Right.
And looking at, you know, what are the current economic winds that we're facing? What's, you know, what's our customer base doing? Like, you know, we only sell to really other SaaS companies. And I know from a lot of my cost cutting stuff that I've been doing at my companies is, you know, software is one of the things that it can be cut. Luckily, we're not seeing high churn or anything like that, because the value that we produce actually helps companies prevent revenue leakage and make sure you're invoicing and doing all that correctly, which is important right now. But getting a new prospect on the phone or just interested has been really, really challenging. It's interesting. In the past couple of weeks, we've seen a lot of improved inbound, where we've gotten more leads, I think, in the past 4 to 5 weeks than we got all in Q1. So something has definitely changed. Hopefully it's a combination of our marketing and then also the economic climate starting to give people hope. Because, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges I saw, and I was talking a lot about this on LinkedIn, is the hype. There's been so much hype at the end of last year, end of this year, about being in a recession. And, you know, the world's going to stop and it's going to be a deep recession. And then all of a sudden it was flipped to, now it's going to be a soft landing, a hard landing, a no landing. I'm like, what's a landing? Like,
yeah, self-fulfilling prophecies, right?
Well, and I think that's what it becomes, where, you know, if you all you do is listen to the news and get so ingrained in the hype,
yeah,
and you start to pay more attention to that than the actual economics coming out of your business, then I think you can get into such a stuck state, like you were talking about. Like, how do we have the mindset to get through it versus, woe is me, we're done. Because, you know what? Building a company, every day you're done.
Yeah.
And you've got to figure out how to get past it. And equally, I like what you were saying about your team, is the team has to believe this is not a sinking ship.
Correct.
This is a storm we are going through, that if we don't navigate it and you know, do what we need to do to make sure the ship's afloat, we will sink. But if we do the hard things, if we do the smart things, we can get through this and get to the
right end. Right. 100%. There has to be that. What's the path through that looks very achievable? It's aggressive and it's challenging, but it's not impossible. It's just improbable. Right. I think that's the message that folks need to be hearing from us as leaders. They say the number one job as the CEO is never to run out of money. And so at the very forefront, despite the responsibility to investors and to shareholders and to customers, I think to staff, the number one responsibility for us is not miss payroll. And so if that requires us to make the challenging decisions so that in 6 to 9 months, we're not having to have those conversations, I think that's where layoffs not only are nice to have, they're absolutely necessary right now. But it doesn't make it easy. I'm not trying to seem like they're frivolous.
The labor market is also interesting as well, because there's still so many companies that are hiring. Like, I literally have 3 companies right now, and the other 2 are hiring. So, like, it's just such an interesting labor market, which is why the conversation around, you know, where's the economy? Are we in a recession? Are we not in a recession? There's just so many conflicting parts of where things are at that, mm-hmm. I don't know. The latest I'm hearing as of now is like, okay, maybe we are going to get through this a little bit easier than we thought. But if we don't get beyond the hype and get back to trying to build businesses, it doesn't matter what's happening, because it's the point. You're going to be in the same position you think you are.
And if you're in any of the listeners like me, if you really play that conversation forward, okay, let's just say that the current ventures we're in completely fail. Well, what are we going to do? Well, I'm not going back to a big company. I've done that. I was bored. So I'm going to do another startup.
And big companies aren't safe right now, right? Because like the previous recession, but I'll just go work for a big company.
Yeah.
There's like round after round of layoffs happening.
100%.
So where do you go?
Where you go? I mean, that Dallas is just big companies. There's not exactly a booming tech hub startups down here. And so we found a lot of our candidates coming through the doors of folks that have been laid off by these big companies. And so if all I'm going to do after this is another startup anyway, then why give up? I mean, this is the time to double down more than anything. But it's a burden for sure.
Well, the one thing I've learned, I've been building startups since 2009. You're not done until you're done. And there's always like, it's interesting for me, because when I go through tough times, I lean into our investors. I want to talk to investors more. Same thing with like customers and that, but really investors, because for me, it's like, you guys tell me what you see is going on in the world. This is where I'm at. I ask for help and I really try to get them to give me perspective, and I don't do it so they tell me what to do. I do it to try to get as many different perspectives from typically like very successful business people. So they're such a great resource that if you can build that relationship, then not only do you get the insight, but you also get the trust. And it's a two-way trust where now all of a sudden they trust more of what you're doing to try to run the business because they understand you more.
Well, going quiet and reducing your comms or your quarterly updates or monthly updates, don't build trust. They break it, right? And one of the sayings that we have internally at Leader is we call it shooting the elephant. Every room has an elephant. And instead of just ignoring it, just shoot the elephant and have the conversation. And so it's a very graphic picture, but we like to say that. I'll get up at our all hands meetings that we do every Monday. It's like, hey team, let's just shoot the elephant. Like, this is a tough time. And I think the same conversation is necessary with investors and shareholders. My last investor pack literally was that, hey, Q1 was a tough quarter. Let's just shoot the elephant. Here's what went wrong, but here's what's going right. And here's the plan. I think to your point, the worst thing we do is veer away from that.
Yeah. I love that. I love that analogy. Shoot the elephant. So, well, let's talk about, you know, the question I always ask on the show is, what do you think other founders and execs should be focused on right now? I mean, what do you think people's heads should be at?
I would just encourage anyone in a position of leadership, whether you're a founder or otherwise, just don't give up. And I know that sounds so cliche, but having gone through it, this is my 11th year in startup land. And I'm not going to do anything else after this. I'm kind of addicted to the chaos more than anything. And I love telling myself I'm not bored. But I think just encourage folks, like, you've never worked harder for anything in your life. So why give up now? And it's tough. It's really tough. I mean, the only times I've ever like got down on my knees and bawled at work is when we've done layoffs. And so it's really tough, but don't give up, because that Batman quote, the night is darkest before the dawn. I think there's some wisdom in that. And like you say, all the experts are telling us it's going to get worse or it's going to get better or it's going to be fine. I don't really know. And I don't really care. I think as founders, let's have our blinders on. Let's focus on the mission of why we started in the first place and stuff the haters. Who cares what they think?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has an opinion, so it doesn't mean it's right. And I think the other thing is no one else knows your business like you know your business. You're the only one that really knows the ins and the outs of everything that's going on. And that's your job as the founder or the exec to manage through it and figure it out. So I don't know. I'm optimistic about the rest of this year. I think there's some big stuff happening. And from what we're seeing at all of my companies right now, movement is gaining momentum. So I think we could have a good end of year, beginning of next year, just in time for the nice political season in the United States to really
get right. Yeah, exactly.
The next challenge.
I'm even just getting inspired hearing you say the same thing, because I can see it, but you sound like a lunatic when you start to say, I see it turning around. But I think Q2 for us is going to be a good quarter. We've come off the back of two difficult quarters, but I'm feeling really optimistic about Q2. But I don't want to be that guy on the street corner that's looked at like a Looney Tune. I really feel like we're at a position now where we can come out of the other end of the stronger.
Yeah, how I rationalize it in my head is I just look at our numbers and go, where are we? Like, certain things are not doing as well and other things are doing better than I thought they would be. And it's like, okay, how do I digest this data and make sense of it and then try to validate what my assumptions are? And it's not going to be validated by watching CNBC all day long.
No. And I like what you said. If your retention metrics are holding strong, then you have happy customers. And so the fact that you're not signing up as many as you'd like right now is not a sign you don't have a great product. It's just an acquisition problem. So scale problems can be solved. If you can get one happy customer, you can get 10, you can get 10, you can get 100. So at this point now, it's just, okay, how do you scale in a healthy way? As opposed to what my whole journey of go-to-market has been, which is just hire all the people and get all the leads and throw it all to the wall and eventually someone will buy. Now it's just a different strategy to get to the same outcome. But if you've got happy customers renewing, like, stay true, stay firm. We'll get through it. We will.
Yeah. A quote that my VC said to me earlier this year was, you know, like, of all the problems that we have, a product problem is not it. Like, the need that we're solving is big and it's real. And we have validation from what we see with customers who buy the product and fully execute on it. The challenge that we've had in 2023, like so many other companies, is a money problem. And money, you know, yes, you can't run out of money. It's goal number one as a CEO. You can't run out of money. But that's what leads to, all right, how do I not run out of money and give us more time? And the time question becomes, we need to cut some expenses. We need to be smarter in different things that we're doing and get through this storm that we're in, but not lose sight of why we're doing it, what the product does, and how do we make customers successful? Because the storm's going to end and you've got to like, you. The other thing I really like that I heard is you can't cut your way to success. So you can cut to extend, but you still have to have a successful product in order to get through. Because when we get out of the storm, what are people going to buy?
That's right. That's right. And one thing that I take a ton of comfort in, and I see it as a challenge. So we've been in a spending freeze and a hiring freeze probably since about August of last year. Every single invoice above $500 lands on me or my CFO's desk. So we try to be much tighter with our spending. Despite that, I think in the last 2 months, we purchased 6 different pieces of software. So we went and got Pendo, we got DocuSign, we got Maxio, we got Yesware. There are 2 others that are escaping me. Oh, Carta, the equity management solution. So despite spending freeze, despite tightening of the belts, we're still going out and purchasing software. So they're solving a pain and a problem that's allowing us to scale faster or scale more efficiently. And so to me, it's like, well, how do I reframe our product, or how do we reframe our positioning, or how do we build the product and the features that allow us to thrive in this market? And so I find that really encouraging because my CFO is a penny counter. There's no way I could have got those past his desk if he didn't truly believe that this is going to help us move forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what we're seeing. That's why we see the customers buy our product the way we do, because they do see that, you know, yeah, we can solve a RevOps problem for them and help them with their understanding their money, they're managing their subscriptions, cash flow, all of that stuff, which is a challenge that just has to be solved. So, well, this has been fun, Matt. I'm glad you came on and we got to talk through some of this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad you got to meet a Kiwi, not an Australian.
I'm careful with the Kiwi thing as well, because one time I told an Australian they were a Kiwi, and that did not
That's not good. That's like calling me a kangaroo or calling you like a maple leaf or something. It's just not good.
I learned that. That was never to be repeated again, that's for sure. So, all right, man. Well, thank you again. Everyone else, Cash and Burn comes out every Tuesday. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.